Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. I've been battling allergies for years now. Let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. What's up, gang? Welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius from Shazday. I'm so pumped to have you here with me. Now listen, The Greatness Machine, we're about two things. Number one, people who are living their passions. And number two, those who are creating greatness in the world and doing both of these things despite the odds against them. Each episode, we're going to feature interviews with game changers, business leaders, you know, telling us their origin stories, what made them tick, what got them to where they are now. Why? So it can help you step into your greatness within your life, your business, and your career. Occasionally, you might hear a few solo episodes from myself, moi as I say, as I leverage my 20 years of entrepreneurship as a CEO and founder to help you grow and level up in your journey to scale your life and your business. So come be a fly on the wall, enjoy the conversation, and I'm stoked to have you here with me. Whoa. All I got to say is Denise Gosnell is amazing. We just had an amazing 1 hour long conversation about her book, The Vacation Effect. It's so interesting. House burns down. She has multi-million-dollar, multiple businesses, realizes that she wants to change her life, goes from working 80 hours a week to working 3 days a week and making more money. Her new book, The Vacation Effect for Entrepreneurs, we'll talk all about that. Stay tuned. What an amazing episode. Guys, welcome to today's episode of The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mashazde. Oh my gosh. Boy, do we have special guests. My friend Denise Gosnell is in the house. Denise, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Darius. I'm excited to be here.
You know, I feel like a kind of an asshole. I was like, I knew your first name, but did I pronounce your last name properly?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I didn't double.
You know, I say Gosnell, depending on how people are spelling it. I say it differently, but yes, you did it perfectly. Thank you.
Oh, so you know, when your last name is Mashazde, you get really, really like kind of picky about getting people's names right.
So, yeah, thank you.
So here we are. Man, yeah. Welcome to the show. It's been so long. I'm so happy to see you.
Likewise.
Yeah. So do you mind if I do a little housekeeping and then we'll jump right in?
Does sure. Work? Go for it.
Very, very cool. For listeners who are new to the show, Greatness Machine, we're about two things. We're about people who are living their passions and those are creating greatness in the world. And Denise is neither short of passion nor greatness. I was so excited to get her on the show. I want to kind of give a little bit of our background. So I met Denise in 2009. It was actually almost like, 4 years ago next month. And I, as many of you guys have heard, I did the Scribe Guided Author program, which I don't even think they do it anymore. I think they're getting rid of it now. But I did the Scribe Guided Author. It's a cohort of 20 authors writing their books. And Scribe's one of those, like, it used to be called Book in a Box, where you could hire them and you kind of work with a ghostwriter. And then Tucker and Javon, who run the company, Tucker's actually kind of on the board now, but they're like, hey, look, there's two programs we have here. One is where you'll work with an author and we'll write the book, you know, with you. And the other's like, you just write your own book and we'll kind of coach you. And Denise and I were the types of people who are such pains in the asses that we had to write our own books. We did this 3-day program and it was so cool. She sat right across from me on this table, small room. We're in the room for 3 days, you know, grinding, getting our outlines done for our book. And I was really like, you know, kind of like my ears were perked up as she kept talking about, you know, the stuff she was doing. And so I'll be talking about, we're going to be talking about her new book, The Vacation Effect for Entrepreneurs, in just a second here. But, the thing that perked my ears up is I'm an entrepreneur, as you guys all know. I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. But I heard her say something to the effect of that she was running 3 companies, was an entrepreneur, and that she was like basically working like 3 days a week. And I was like, no fucking way. I don't believe it. But as time went on, you know, sometimes people will say stuff like that, and you're kind of like, I call bullshit. But by the end of those 3 days, I was like, she's not bullshitting. Like, this is like a thing. This is obviously your thing, like one of your big things. And so, piqued my interest, and I was so happy to see that you got your book done and launched it out in the world. And I'm just so excited for us to get to spend some time really working today, talking about the book, because I think it's so important for entrepreneurs. I think that you know, burnout and grinding and hustle and all that stuff is kind of played out, and that's not how we really get our best work done. So, Denise, first of all, I'm so pumped to have you here. I want to give your formal bio, and then do you mind if we dive into some origin story?
Sure. Sounds good.
So as I mentioned, she's an entrepreneur, attorney as well, a best-selling book, CEO of The Vacation Effect, but best-selling author of The Vacation Effect for Entrepreneurs that just came out, crushing it, one of the number one bestseller on Amazon. And you know, you got a kind of a laundry list of accolades, speaker, you know, lifestyle designer, all these amazing things you're doing. But man, I am so excited to hear all about the book, all the things you've been up to since we last saw each other a couple years ago. And if you don't mind, Denise, like, take us back. I doubt someone, you know, just lands where you've landed. There's got to be some amazing background around that got you here. But do you mind giving us kind of part of your origin story?
Sure, happy to do that. You know, it's so interesting as when I go back in time, you know, as a kid, I had great parents, but they came from humble beginnings, and so did we as kids, you know. So I lived in a small community in Indiana, and I was teased for being poor. And I remember at a very young age deciding that I'm going to work my butt off and I'm going to make a ton of money so no one will ever tease me again. And then it's so interesting. So that led me to like being the classic overachiever, valedictorian of my high school class, like focused on, okay, what can I do to make more money? Got through my undergrad in less than three years, went to law school, wanted to be a patent lawyer. I was a software developer, but that wasn't enough. I was only making six figures. I wanted to make seven. So, you know, like, so that's why I originally went into patent law, which I don't do that anymore. I only work about 10 hours a week in my law firm because I have it streamlined with what I'm doing. But my real passion, though, is what I'm doing now with my coaching. But anyway, so what happened, Darius, was I basically got to the spot where I became a millionaire and I still wasn't happy. I realized that didn't solve the fact that, A, people are always going to criticize you for something. My daughter got teased for being rich. Isn't that crazy? My daughter got teased. So the whole thing I built my life around was to make so much money that no one would ever tease me for being poor, that my own daughter in high school and middle school got teased for being the rich kid in a very wealthy school district, in an already existing, you know, high, you know, upper middle class school district. So I'm like, wait a minute, this is messed up. That wasn't the real pivot point. Like I basically got into the cycle of an addiction to work. And it wasn't until around 11 years ago that I realized what I was doing wrong.
Yeah, that's that. I love that background. It's like ironic, right? Like God's like, hey, listen, I'm gonna make you feel so pissed off that you're gonna go and overachieve, and then your kid's gonna get picked on for the thing that you got the opposite of what you got picked on when you were a kid, right?
So right.
It's like kids are assholes, right?
That's just what they do. It's normal. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. So it's interesting. Like you and I kind of, you know, I actually came from upper middle class area, but my parents were like hardcore entrepreneurs, you know, and they were like, you better grind, right? So I was taught to grind at a young age too. What do you think it was? Was your parents hard workers? Was that just something that came from within? What was it that really made you like this overachiever, like in your mind, at least?
I think it was both the fact that my parents were incredibly hardworking and that's what they were taught, that you put in a hard day's work, and you know, you can do anything you're willing to put the effort behind, but also the addictive cycle of wanting to be the best so that I could be paid the most money. I think it was both of those.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. There's this concept in Hinduism and Buddhism. They all have different names for it, but it's called the hungry ghost. Have you ever heard of this before?
I don't think so.
Yeah. So it's this demon, and almost every major like religion has a version of it where, you know, where essentially the more you get, the more you want. Right. And they call it the hungry ghost. And that's like kind of like the overarching name in Eastern religion for it. But, yeah, it's interesting to see a lot of entrepreneurs have the hungry ghost. I'm a hungry ghoster, you know, where it's like, yeah, I achieve and then the bar goes up and I want more, and then I achieve and the bar goes up and want more. I use the example of like when I started building my first businesses, where I was like, oh, I just want to make, you know, six figures, to your point, right? I just want to make 10 grand in a month. And then the minute I made 10, I'm like, I want to make 20 grand in a month, right? Mm-hmm. And so I did a podcast on this about 2 years ago where I called it the biggest lie in the world, where I said, like, you know, like, once I get, then I'll be happy. Once I get, then I will feel X. What are your thoughts on that? Like, what's your perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that's exactly what was happening to me and what happens to most entrepreneurs that I know and people in general, is that we think that, you know, someday when we get to that X level, when we have more money or we have more time, then finally we can, you know, travel more, spend more time on the causes we care about, spend more time on our hobbies and with our family. Like, it's that, it's part of the addictive cycle. But what I came to realize 11 years ago, after I had a tragic house fire, what I came to realize was that there's never going to be that magic moment where you feel like you can just slow down and do all that stuff. Even when I, you know, like going back to what I was talking about with being, you know, poor as a child and then, you know, becoming a millionaire, which was all I ever wanted. I still didn't feel like I had the time to do the stuff that I wanted to do. So what I realized, Darius, is that freedom is a mindset, not a destination. Freedom is actually a decision that you make, and you decide to build your life, your business around your life instead of your life around your business. And then that was what I ended up doing. And I had to work through the kinks of how to actually make it sustainable long term without everything falling apart. But yeah, freedom is a mindset, because when are you ever going to do those things? There's always going to be something. Like, if you allow people to put, you know, a calendar, a meeting at the time of your daughter's recital, well, guess what? They don't know that it's your daughter's recital. You shouldn't give that as an option.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. This episode is brought to you by Shopify. In the world of successful partnerships, names like Procter & Gamble, Ben & Jerry, and supply and demand echo through business history. But when it comes to growing your business, who are the perfect partners? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. We're talking from launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we hit $1 million order stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Picture this, a time when my business was facing a tough hurdle and I wasn't sure how to break through. But then came the breakthrough moment, a game changer that took my business to the next level. You know, what I absolutely adore about Shopify is its unparalleled ability to adapt and grow with your ambitions. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 75 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Darius, all lowercase. That's D-A-R-I-U-S. Go to shopify.com/Darius now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/Darius. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. Hey there, friends. It's Darius Mashazda here, and I have a little confession to make. You see, I've been battling allergies for years now, and let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Allergies have been my constant companion. They stop me from fully enjoying the little things in life, canceling plans with friends because of sudden allergy attack, to missing out on an outdoor activity because of sneezing fits. Allergies have been a real nuisance. Luckily, for those of us who live with symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing and a runny nose, itchy, watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I've been a Claritin D user for many, many years now, and let me tell you, it's made a world of difference. Since I started using Claritin D, my symptoms have improved dramatically. Now I can breathe easier, enjoy outdoor activities without worrying about sneezing fits, and truly live my life without being held back by allergies. Ready to live as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter now. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear, use as directed. So let me ask you a question. My mind's racing with multiple things. Number one is, you know, tell us a little bit about that moment that really kind of did it for you. Cause I want to hear about the sometimes God gives us these pivotal moments where it's like, hey, wake up here. You know, I'm going to teach you something right now. And if you listen, it's going to like make your life a lot better. And I think a lot of people kind of go back to sleep right after they hear these things, or they're afraid to make changes because, you know, there's so much that they've invested in the current status that they're in, mm-hmm. that making these pivotal changes is always really hard. I'd love to hear kind of what did it for you. I mean, I know what's done it for me over time, and I'll share that with you in a second, but I would love to hear what did it for you.
Yeah. So on June 20th, 2011, I'll never forget that date and that exact moment. At 8 a.m., there was a big boom and a shake, and my house was struck by lightning. My husband saw it hit the house, and we were up, thankfully. But so we didn't know if we were on fire or not. But we were, the phones were dead. There's a horrible storm. That's, you know, that's what was happening. About 10 minutes later, there's this, we still didn't know if we were on fire or what all the damage was. We just knew we were out of power and the phones were dead. There's this knock on the front door, you know, and I go to the front door and there's this fireman with a look of hurry on his face. And he's like, ma'am, your house is on fire. You and your family need to get outside immediately. And then Darius, he asked me a question that was like the most powerful question I've ever been asked in my life. And what he said was, what do you want us to retrieve in the next 5 minutes before your house is destroyed by fire and water? Because your house gets ruined by water by just putting out the fire, even if the fire doesn't get it all. What do you want us to retrieve in the next 5 minutes? You got to get out, but what do you want us to go get for you? You know, and and so I fast forward. So I answered his question, but and I'll tell you what I said in a minute, but I was standing in my neighbor's garage for like 8 hours. It's raining, but it still took him 8 hours to put the fire out in the walls and everywhere. And I kept replaying in my mind, like a slow motion movie, how I had answered him. Like it was that moment, that gift from God, with those 8 hours of me replaying how I had answered him. And is it okay if I share with you how I answered him? Like, what do I want you to retrieve from my house?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
what did they retrieve?
So what I asked them for were, my daughter was 5 at the time, her bunny, the stuffed animal, like a member of the family, right? When you, those who have kids, we know what that's like if you lose the thing of the stuffed animal of the day, right? So bunny, my wedding photos from 28 years ago that I didn't have digitally. That was before we had digital cameras. And my grandmother's blanket that she made me as a child. It was a quilt she embroidered with love and acceptance between different cultures. And she used to tell me stories about how important love and acceptance is of other cultures. So that those were the three things I had them retrieve. Of course, I had my daughter, my laptop, and my passport. Like, we are all safe and there were no pets. So, you know, that's the first thing, of course, anyone would have them retrieve. But like, when you get past that, the humans, you know, the passport and the computer, like, what else would you retrieve? What comes to your mind?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe like it's funny when you ask. I'm also a person that's like, I'm like, if anyone ever broke into my house, I'm like, I don't know what they would steal. Mm-hmm. probably keepsakes, like what you're talking about, like you know, I guess, yeah, it's funny. I just thought about it when you asked. It's like, if I had 5 minutes, I'm like,
well, yeah,
maybe like my favorite piece of art. You know, and yes, some pictures that I don't have, like that we don't have digitally stored, which kind of makes me think I need to go and get all my like old pictures digitally stored now. Mm-hmm. You can go rebuild that stuff, right?
Right, exactly. And that was what I was replaying in my mind from my neighbor's garage was, wow, here I am working 80 hours a week, running 3 companies to pay for a bunch of stuff that I don't even have them retrieve. I don't even care enough about it to be a priority. While it's burning, like, what am I doing with my life? So that was the moment that was such a gift for me to realize that. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, like, I still have a nice office now in our new house here, you know, took 2 bedrooms and turned it into 1. No, that's not a fake background. That's my real huge office. But I like nice things, but this is not who I am. If I lose it all tomorrow, who I am is right here. And it's in my heart. And it's, you know, it's in my family. That's what really matters. So that's what the gift was of that moment.
I love that. That's so powerful. You took the words right out of my mouth. I said, man, what a gift, you know, what a gift to learn that. And I mean, the hopeful thing here is that I would say is that, you know, and I guess the gift that you're giving to the world is that, you know, readers don't need to have their house burned down to learn this lesson. They can kind of sense that, hey, you know, like, why am I doing what I'm doing right now? You know, what, and it's interesting. I interviewed this guy, Larry Yatch, yesterday. It's the second interview I've done with him. He's a Navy SEAL, wrote a book called How Leadership Really Works. And we were talking about this specific topic. And he said, you know, success is where you feel fulfilled every day, right? That's where you, like, the process of showing up and doing what you're doing, and it's sustainable. It's something I can keep doing, and I feel it and I enjoy it. And it's not a destination. It's what's happening in the moment, right? And I butchered kind of the way he said it, but that was what I took away from it. And so what I'm hearing you say is like, yeah, like all these material things, like, does it really, if you weren't willing to sacrifice for them in the fire, like, then are they really, like, do you really need them? Right. Mm-hmm. And yes, to your point, like I like nice stuff too. Mm-hmm. Right. But what am I willing to give up my day-to-day life and like be miserable and be like grinding to create this stuff that like could all go up in a moment's notice, in 5 minutes notice? I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head that no, like that's not what matters, right? It's how do you spend your time to feel successful and to enjoy yourself? So let me ask you a question. At that point, like what did, like take a step back the moment before the fire. What if I said, hey, take a snapshot and tell me what did your life look like from, you know, these three businesses? What's an average week in the life of Denise pre-fire?
Yeah. So I was, you know, like I mentioned, I was working 80 hours a week. At that time, I was a patent lawyer. So I had a patent law firm. And then I also had my consulting company where I did some tech consulting. And then I still had my real estate company that my husband and I have had for almost 30 years. And so, you know, I was working most of the time during that, the weeks right before the fire, you know, being the patent lawyer, doing a bunch of work I hated. I didn't even like what I was doing, but it paid me a lot of money. Like patent lawyers are like the highest paid lawyers out there because you have to actually take two bar exams. You have to have a science degree as well. Mine was in computer science. You get paid to learn a patent language, you know? So, it was great money, but I was miserable. I did not like what I was doing. And it was such a gift to have to analyze that.
And so that's pre-fire. Mm-hmm. Post-fire, you're like, all right, something's got to give. Walk us through like what the journey looked like, you know, from that to this three companies, 3 days, you know, the vacation effect, as you call it. Like, mm-hmm. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. So the day of the fire, I vowed that I was going to figure out how to, you know, have a good life, have plenty of free time, but also still provide a good life for my family, but not so much that it came at the expense of, you know, having to choose my business over my family like I was before. So I made a vow that day to myself that I'm going to make my family a priority, and I'll figure out how to have a good living. It doesn't have to be as much as it was before, because like I didn't even need all that stuff, right? But I still wanted to have a comfortable living. I wanted to be able to provide a decent level where we could travel and things, right? So what happened, Darius, at first I failed. I would work less and my revenue went down. The first year after the fire, I worked a lot less. I was dealing with the house fire and all that, so I gave myself the grace, but still. And then I would work a lot more and my revenue would go up. And I'm like, well, crap, this isn't going to work. I need to find a solution that's sustainable where I can work less and, you know, still keep making good money. So what I realized, I actually had an epiphany happen at a meditation retreat that I went to, where I asked God in the meditation and, you know, my angels or whoever was answering me. I believe we get input from, you know, lots of sources. It's, you know, how we receive it. The download that I got when I asked, how can I have the dream schedule I've always wanted without sacrificing so much revenue? And the answer that I got was, Denise, all you have to do is decide and make today the way you want tomorrow to be. And, you know, so all you have to do is decide and make today the way you want tomorrow to be. I dreamed of a 3-day work week. So, you know what? I'm like, okay, well, how about if I do a 30-day experiment where I do a 3-day work week? Not forever. Like, it's easy to test, right? It's easy to dip our toe in the water versus committing to something long-term just to see the impact. I think as entrepreneurs and humans, we need to do more of that, to give ourselves permission to just try something out. So I did a 30-day experiment. And it was painful at first. I worked 3 days a week for 30 days. I had to reschedule some meetings to pull that off. But what was interesting, Darius, I started noticing things. I started noticing where I was wasting time. I started noticing where I needed to hire more people. And I noticed, you know, where the heck I needed to get out of that company altogether and quit doing patents, which is one of the things I did. I stopped doing that. I changed how I even worked in my law firm, which is now very part-time. So, and I renewed the experiment for 30 days and it got better. It got easier, but I had tons of free time now and I started optimizing. That was what I had missed before. I missed the fact that you can't just work less and expect everything to magically happen. You actually have to pay attention to the data of what it tells you you need to do differently in order to maintain the same output from less time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So first of all, what I'm hearing you say is you created some constraints for yourself. You said, hey, look, here are my 3 days. Mm-hmm. I'm going to shove everything into those 3 days. And then once you shoved everything into those 3 days, you're able to kind of, I guess take a step back is you probably were like more alert because you were working less. Mm-hmm. Right. And so tell us about that a little bit. Was there like this thing where you're like, man, if you're working, were you working like 8 hours in those days or were you working 12 hours in those 3 days?
It depended. It was between 8 and 10. Now there might've been something where something really needed to get done and there might've been a 12. So it was an average of, 32 to 36 hours in those 3 days.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. and some people might be like 12 hours in a day and probably for, work athletes like mm-hmm. yourself and me, I'm like, I could pound out 12 hours of my sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like to do it that often, but I can work an average of 10 hours a day and it doesn't really faze me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I could see that. So look, and most people I think can do that. So especially if what were your days? What days did you choose to work?
Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And I picked that strategically just because that would allow me to take care of things from the weekend that came in. Like it just worked better for my particular three companies. I could have done, other days as well. Some of my clients like doing like Fridays off where they have a 3 day weekend,
Yeah, that's what I was going to mm-hmm. say. I'm like Tuesday. I like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because mm-hmm. then you get like 4 day weekends. Mm-hmm. Do you have any clients that do that?
Most of them don't. I have clients that do like a Friday that is a day off and Monday is a free day in the company where they're focused on creation with no meetings. So I do have a few clients that do that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know some friends that do that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So when you did it, did you notice like, oh wow, like I'm more rested. So and you said you have a computer science background, mm-hmm. is that correct?
Yeah.
So I'm sure your freaking CS brain kicked in and you're like, must optimize code.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny. So I mean, for people that don't necessarily have that gift of optimization, right? I mean, I'd say the average listener probably does not have a degree in engineering. What like how do you help them to, because I hear what you're saying, like, hey, look, anyone can do something for 30 days. So I like that thought principle mm-hmm. around, hey, look, don't just like give yourself, it's an experiment, mm-hmm. which means that you can quit if you don't like it. You're not, mm-hmm. it's not a full change. But like, what about the team? Like I have a team of people, they're working 5 days, I'm working 3 days. They're like, yeah, fuck you, Darius. Like, mm-hmm. like you don't even work, man. You're on vacation all the time and I'm sitting here grinding. Like, what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah. So that's actually a really great question that I deal with my clients in a lot of different ways. I told my team that, I was doing an optimizing experiment and then that's what I have my clients, tell their team members. And then once you get it optimized, I tell them to go let your team do the same thing and not the exact same way, but in the way that you start building a culture around valuing results instead of the time that they spend. So if my team members can get their work done in 4 days and they want to leave at noon on a Friday or not even work Friday and everything's done that was they're being measured on, I'm fine with that. So like I actually like declare that to them. Like I want us all to be on a system of being rewarded for results. So that's scary for some business owners, but I think the best way to even explain how this principle works, it's where the name vacation effect, the vacation effect comes from. You know how when you get ready to go on vacation, Darius, you get like a month's worth of work done and the 2 days before you leave? Like what's happening there? If we stop and dissect it, you're forced to focus on what really matters, right? And then you're forced to eliminate or delegate all the stuff that you probably shouldn't have been doing anyway, or that really wasn't that important. So by limiting the amount of time you're willing to work, whether it's 3 days or 4 days or whatever anyone would choose, you're and basically just giving yourself 30 days to say, you know what, I'm going to force myself to only work this much per week for this experiment period. You actually start noticing how you start forcing yourself to focus on the needle movers and cut out all the wasted fluff. That was the most interesting thing that happened. It's like Parkinson's law, you know, the amount of time it takes to complete a project will fill to expand the time that you've allocated for it. You give yourself a month to do something, it'll take a month to do something. You give yourself 2 days to do it because you're leaving on vacation or because you've made a deal with yourself, you're only going to work those 2 days this week. Guess what? You magically figure out how to do it, often in a better way than before.
I love that. And, I'm glad you brought up, and I'm a person that's like so literal. I didn't ask where the name of the book came from, but it makes total sense. So, I think there was a quote that's like what's the most productive day in of the year in someone's work schedule? It's like the day before they go on vacation, right? Mm-hmm. To your point. So
why not make that hyper efficiency a way of life? You know, that's what I'm all about, teaching people how to do, where they're focused on results all the time. And then they get to free up time for whatever they want it to be, whether it's start another company, whether it's have hobbies, you know, spend time on all those someday maybes they never get around to. That I want them to have so much space and joy in their life that each week feels like a vacation. And that's the second meaning. It's a double meaning of the vacation effect, the hyper efficiency you get and also having a sweet life.
And so when you start looking, it sounds like you once you figured this out for yourself, well, that you then brought this out to other folks through coaching and now through the book. But before we go there, though, what were some of the stumbling blocks that you experienced, you know, in this iterative process of learning how to create this whole framework?
Yeah, the biggest stumbling block I had, and that 100% of my coaching clients around this methodology have had, is guilt. The guilt of what will my team think? Will they think I'm lazy if I'm not working as much as they are? And you kind of raise this too, you know, like, what do you tell your team? The guilt of, am I being lazy? The internal guilt, you know, that we have as human beings because of the society, the business culture we've been put in, that we're somehow judging ourselves as lazy. That was the biggest obstacle I had to overcome and to learn to turn the volume down on it. It never goes away, ever. It's always there. But I'd learned to turn it down to where I don't even listen to it anymore. Because at the end of the day, Darius, isn't it logical that if I can get the same results in 3 days that I used to get in 6 or 7, that there's nothing for me to feel guilty about if I take those 2 days a week for whatever I want them to be, you know, whatever makes me happy. Yeah. Logically, there's nothing to feel guilty about. Yet we do. It's like installed in the human condition of North America, and I think even people around the world, their guilt is always kind of part of our. Like it's part of our life journey that God gave us these emotions so we can feel the range of life. Right. I don't think guilt ever goes away, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think there's a theory called theory of reciprocity in human interaction. Mm-hmm. And so there might be that's probably one of the pieces of it, especially is there's this like, well, it's not reciprocal if I'm the boss and I'm working 3 days a week and you're working 5 days a week. So I think from a design perspective, there probably does need to either A, it's like, don't feel guilty about it. And you're just a boss that's there 3 days a week and they know it. And they're probably cool with it as long as, cause you're probably not, you know, they're like, well, I don't have to deal with this person that much. Right. Mm-hmm. So they're not, you know, they're not micromanaged and, you know, I'm sure people like that. Mm-hmm. But that's probably a more defensive posture. I think the offensive posture to your earlier point is no, design a culture of the vacation effect where, you know, where people design their weeks, they get them. I don't know if you know, and maybe that's a question for you is, hey, when you said that, my first instinct was like, well, how do you even do that? And like, I don't want to manage what their quote unquote workload is. And what about if environments where it's tons of projects and tons of workloads, do they build their week out and go get it approved? And then like they can get it done in, you know, like, how do you manage that? Cause my brain went to like, I don't want to manage any of that.
Right. I honestly don't manage it. Like I have really great people that they understand that I have certain expectations of the results that they get. And like they, in the beginning, they used to tell me, hey, I want to take a half day to go do this, or I want to take a half day to do that. I'm like, I don't need to know any of that. Like you go do it. Like as long as the stuff's getting done, I don't care what you do. You can golf every day for all I care. If you're getting the results, like I truly don't mind. As you know, like if we've got scheduled meetings, that's different, of course. And if they've got client, you know, the things that they've got on their calendar, but like my team has total flexibility and autonomy on how they get their work done. And I realize every business is different to where there's some where that's easier to do than others, but you're right. I don't want to be a micromanager, but I think it comes down to having clear responsibilities and clear deliverables and the results are being measured on. And as long as that's clear, then that model can work really well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So going in a different direction. So as you started to do this, you know, outside of the guilt side of it, you know, from a design standpoint, well, like the other thing that came up for me was I went from running a really big business. I think when I met you, actually, I was still CEO of my company and I had 1,000 employees in this company. And I used to say, I'm like, it was the least amount of work I ever did was when I had 1,000 employees, because I built a big infrastructure that was under me. And I wasn't even in the strategic day to day. I was at the board level. Right. And so, that was a really easy business for me to run, because I had built all the scaffolding and there was all these people and managers and there was infrastructure and it was solid. And then I went from that world to my new world, which is solopreneur, which I honestly had never been a solopreneur before. You know, a small team. I got, you know, 4 or 5 people on my team. And I'm doing consulting now, coaching. And so I'm the product though, right? Like people are paying to work with me. Like CEOs want to work with me directly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not a 80-hour a week gig or anything like that. Like I work 60 hours a month. So like I could do, I can just do it naturally because I don't coach that enough, and I don't want to coach enough, and I don't have to, because I charge a lot for it. Right. But let's say you aren't me, you are the product. You know, you can't charge what I charge and you want to do what you're talking about, but still make a living. How do you do that when you're the product? Because I think some people will have that issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really great question. And so what I did was, because like in my law firm, you know, I was the product. So I had to reshape and restructure how I spent my time to where, I basically was able to get the same amount of money for doing it in less hours. Cause you know, basically it's all about being able to free up, you know, hours in the day to build your business around your life instead of your life around your business. So what used to be an hour long meeting got moved to 30 minutes or 45 minutes where I could fit more of them in less time. Like, you know, I was able to shift my calendar to where I like still serve the same clients, but I just like subtly, I didn't even like have a conversation with them about it. I just did it. Like when they'd say, when can we book our next call? I started moving them to my Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays instead of my Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I started asking them, hey, would it be okay? Or I would just say, why don't we set this one for 30 minutes with a 15 minute buffer? Because I think we can get everything done in that amount of time. They were actually happy I was suggesting 30 minutes instead of an hour. And, you know, we put the 15 minute buffer in case it went over, but most of the time it finished in 30 minutes, you know, back to the whole Parkinson's law discussion. So it's like, you know, if you feel like you can't do it, I would encourage you to challenge that assumption and start with what you can do. See how you could rearrange your calendar and cut your meetings by the meeting time by 30 or 40% or even up to half. See where you can be more structured with how you're organizing your schedule, and maybe just do the 30-day experiment just to learn how to optimize, to identify what you need to optimize. But then maybe it's just building a 4-day work week. You know, maybe it's just having weekends free again. Like start with where you're at. It doesn't have to be the same as mine. That would be, you know, my advice on that. But one clarification I'd like to make on what you might be wondering, like what happens if an emergency comes up on a Tuesday or Thursday, which is my what I call my freedom days. I have a 2-hour emergency buffer. That was another challenge I had, Darius, with the model. I had to add a 2-hour emergency buffer to my calendar to where I don't use it unless like my team texts me or a client texts me with an emergency. And I get to decide what the emergency is. They don't, right? Like I determine, is it worth me, you know, interrupting my freedom day to take care of this right now during my block that afternoon? Because it's, you know, all hell's going to break loose and I'd rather take care of it today than deal with it tomorrow in the aftermath. Or is this something that can wait? And maybe once or twice a month, I'll have something come up. Like I might have a client who's about to have a meeting with Sir Richard Branson or whatever. And they whipped out a document on them that they need to sign or whatever. I mean, I'm making that up, but you know, like that kind of stuff happens and you don't always have control over, you know, when that happens. And I'll be like, you know what, I'm going to look at this. I'll just let them know, hey, I'll look at that at 3:00 this afternoon, that, you know, when my emergency buffer is. So I still keep control of my schedule. I still give that. And I give that time back to myself. That was one of the missing ingredients to making the 3-day work week sustainable, was I had to do an emergency buffer. And like I said, most of the time I don't need it, but that allowed my team to communicate something urgent to me. And that allowed my clients to get a hold of me if it was truly an emergency.
That makes a lot of sense. So, yeah. So by doing that, you basically, you're like, hey, we have this client who's a pain in the ass. I'm not saying that you have those, but sometimes you do. And they need you. And you're like, that's not an emergency. Tell them I'll talk to them tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is that essentially like, or you fire the client, I guess, if they don't respect that. And then in the event that it's something that you do deem to be an emergency, what I heard you say is you're like, great, I have a 2-hour buffer and that is a real emergency. I'll talk to them at 3:00.
Right.
Is that exactly how that works?
Yeah, basically. And it's in my judgment, you know, it's like, is this something I deem urgent enough that I'm willing to drop what I'm doing on my freedom day during my buffer that I have set aside for these kinds of things to talk to them then? So yes, exactly.
That makes total sense. I love that. So, so as you started designing all this stuff and you're like, okay, cool. I got these like 2 days off because I'm, you know, doing this vacation effect thing. I only have to work Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You know, every now and again, I get this little 2-hour thing that happens, but more or less, like, I got my time back, right? What did you start doing with the Freedom Days? I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, so a lot of different things. I love to travel. So this summer, I spent 6 weeks abroad in the UK and Italy, and that was a blast. So, you know, just traveling a lot. I have a vacation home in Sedona. I travel there 1 week per month to my Sedona house, and I love hiking there, you know, just going out in nature. I'm going there. We're recording this on a Friday. I'm going there tomorrow on a Saturday, and I'll be there for a week. So I'll be out hiking in Sedona every day next week, and that'll be so much fun. You know, I modify my Freedom Days for the month. Like every Tuesday and Thursday on my calendar is blocked off as a Freedom Day. But if an event comes up for like a mastermind group I'm a member of, like Maverick or Genius Network or something or whatever, I might rearrange those Freedom Days on a given month. Each month, the month before, I'm planning the month ahead. Okay, what 8 Freedom Days do I want to give myself next month? And so like it might be a 2-week vacation in a like when I went to the UK for 3 weeks in June and July, I gave myself 3 weeks off and then I worked for 2 weeks. You know what I mean? Like 5 days a week. For 2 weeks. So it's not like it has to be the same every single week. You can adapt it to whatever it is. But the key that the deal that I made with myself is that I will give myself 8 business days every single month to wake up and say, what do I want to do today that'll make me happy? And that was what was transformative.
So on those eight days, those are blocked. You're not doing anything that has to do with your quote unquote businesses, or are you like they're like days off, like it's like a Saturday.
It's like I have nothing scheduled. So what do I want to do today that'll make me happy? You know, so like during my book launch, like on a few of those days, I was calling old friends, catching up with them. I didn't want to just ask them to support my book launch, and I hadn't talked to them in 5 years, right? You know, so it was like, you know, I've been spending a lot of time, a lot more time with my mom and the nonprofit she and my dad started 10 years ago. And, you know, it just kind of depends on what's going on. Like I'm working on 2 new books right now, The Vacation Effect for Teams, covering some of these things we were talking about that aren't in the first book, and The Vacation Effect for Everyday Living. So on one of my Freedom Days, I might sit down and just work on a chapter. That's in it, but it's good. The criteria is I just don't want it to be in the trenches of the company, like of the day to day of the company. But if it's starting a new company, if it's working on a new book or stuff like that, that's not, as long as it meets the joy criteria and it's not in the trenches of the company.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Cause I started thinking about my stuff and I'm like, well, there's a lot of stuff that I do, especially now, where it's even this, like let's use podcast for example, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, would podcasts be me being in the trenches, or podcasts just need doing things I love to do? I love doing podcasts. This is like, this is fun for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So would I, you know, anyhow, you just got me thinking a little bit about what do I consider work, right? And what do I consider play? That's kind of work, right? Mm-hmm. But I guess everyone kind of makes it their own. Is that kind of the right way?
Exactly.
Of thinking about it?
Yeah. And every one of my clients has done it differently. I have clients that have 2 days, two Freedom Days, where one of them is a personal Freedom Day where they like go hiking or do whatever they, hobbies, athletics, whatever. And then they've got one Freedom Day where it's just nothing scheduled in the company, no meetings or anything. And it's a creation day for them. They might record new content, but they love having space in their calendars. I have other clients that I help them free up 2 days per week that literally is still, they consider them work days, but there's nothing scheduled. So they could just be like, what do I want to work on in the business today that I think will give me, you know, the most results so that I never otherwise would get to. So there's magic, Darius, that happens in having space in your calendar. Like answers come to you when you have space, right? You've had that happen before, I'm sure.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm a chronic burner outer. Like I've broken myself a few times. It took me actually stepping down as CEO of my company, selling my ownership in my business, and having nothing on my calendar and watching my behavior, which it was, I wish I videotaped it so I could show people what I did. I went nuts with my book launch, went nuts building it. I mean, I just need to be distracted with work, right? I'm such a fucking workaholic and I burned myself out twice. And then the second time I did it, I was like, I'm done. And that was it. And I said, this is not, because I think you can always sell yourself on this. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I think that as entrepreneurs, we sell ourselves on, well, I got to do this. This is just important because I got to make sure this is successful. And so I'll use my book launch as an example. Well, I got to make this be a bestseller. And like, I got to put, and you know, I'm all or nothing. So I'm going to put everything into it that I got. And that means I'm going to do all these crazy things to get people to support my book. And this is the middle of COVID. I didn't even have a job. And I spent 1500 hours on a book launch. Right. And so I did that. And then I did it with my coaching practice when I launched it. And then I saw this thing where I'm like, you know, when I was running a $200 million company, I could see why I could argue that point. There's a logical argument to be made as to why I was traveling 192 days a year, even though I would never do it again that way. I could see how it was a convincing argument to do that way. But now I'm not. I'm at a point in my life where I don't even need the money, right? And so like, this is not a work issue. This is a Darius issue. Right. And so I'd love to hear like how you see people like untangle that web, because for me, it took me like blowing myself up without having the excuse of the big business to be like, whoa, 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 guy, I'll put you anywhere and you'll go do this. It doesn't like you don't even need a really good reason. So this is not a work needs me issue. This is a Darius needs to feel valued issue in this way. And so you need to like rethink your priorities. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly what happened to me. Like, you know, I was the classic workaholic as well that, you know, was facing burnout. And then my house fire, God gave me the gift of that perspective, but it's totally it's a cultural thing, I believe, especially in North America, and the USA is really bad at it in that our business leaders tout the American grind as the best way to succeed. And in many cases that it's the only way to succeed when that's not actually true. There are, you know, you can succeed by the hustle and grind. You and I both did it, right? But you also, it's not sustainable long-term. It leads to burnout and it becomes this addictive cycle. Like imagine the hamster wheel. You're always on the hamster wheel and you don't realize you could step off it at any time. And there's this beautiful beach waiting for you on the other side. You just have to get off the thing and walk over to it, you know, but we get caught in that addictive cycle. It's like what we were talking about at the beginning that, you know, I realized that there was never going to be any amount of money or success that was just magically going to make me happy where I felt like I could slow down. I had to actually realize how messed up our culture is on making you feel like you have to work all the time. And that it's like conditioned, it's brainwashed us. Like and it's in our subconscious, like Denise, the way I was born and Darius, the way you were born, like, and as we were growing up in this culture, we were taught that that's the way you're supposed to be. So we feel like we're defying something important when we go against it. And that's the part we all have to unwind from. You know, I think step one is awareness, right? You had to have awareness of it, you know, and I don't know if there was a pivot point for you where you had awareness. For me, it was the house fire. I realized how messed up our culture is and that there will never be a good time to have freedom. You know, when I say freedom, I mean freedom in your schedule and to take the time to do the things that would make you happy. You have to consciously choose to build your business around your life and be willing to optimize, like what I was talking about happens right before you go on vacation. You just have to make the decision. I'm going to try it.
Yeah. For me, it was a lot of experimentation. I mean, everything from like psychedelic journeys, honestly, where I was talking about the Hungry Ghost, where the Hungry Ghost showed up and I'd have a conversation with them and watch that come out of me, to then pulling the foot off the gas and taking a ton of time off, like and feeling really good, and then watching that part of me creep back up where I started taking on too much again and burning out again. So for me, I wish it could have been less painful, but for me it was watching the programming like do its thing. Mm-hmm. And as the programming created these results I didn't like, I was like, I'm not doing this. Like this is that. And what it really was, I figured out the underlying issue for me was self-worth. Like, hey, I need to feel worthy. Mm-hmm. I need all this affirmation. And business is such an easy way for me to get it. And I keep going there because it's really comfortable. And then I kind of flipped it on its head. I was like, you know, I'm going to challenge myself to just have space. And kind of to your point, I mean, it's a long story, but essentially there was a whole spiritual journey to getting there. And finally I was like, I'm so uncomfortable with space, I'm creating space. And the challenge to do that became a challenge, and it's not perfect, but the more space I had, the more I was like, I'm not comfortable, which means I need to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I did some of the things you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But it was like, hey, I would, you know, like I would finish a project, and I wasn't before. What I was doing is I was like hunting hard to have the next projects lined up. And I'm like, I'm not hunting hard this time. I'll let them come to me. Right. Mm-hmm. So just little stuff like that. And I was okay with making less money. That was actually part of it, mm-hmm. with the intention of creating long-term sustainability. So I did kind of some of the stuff you talked about. It just came painful. Mm-hmm. It's my curse. I always have to learn shit the hard way. You know?
Yeah, you and me both. We both have done that.
Yeah. It's like, I know that about myself now. Yeah. So yeah, that was kind of how it happened for me. I had a really interesting question I want to ask you, and I just forgot it, but I know where I was going to go. You mentioned two names of people that we have in common. So I just interviewed Joe Polish on his on the new book he has, and Yannick is a buddy of mine. So it sounds like you've spent a lot of time, and I saw that you are connected with Dan Sullivan too. And I know a lot of these guys really promote this mentality around, you know, designing your life and designing your time. You know, did masterminds have like a strong, was that a big part of this too? Like being around other folks that were really intentional about not, you know, living to work, but, you know, or working to live the other way around, you know, how did masterminds play into that for you? Cause just seeing kind of your network just tells me I'm asking a question that I think I know the answer to, but I'm curious.
Yeah. It definitely has, on both perspectives, like in some of the masterminds that I've been a member of and that you mentioned, and others that I've been in as well. There were both ends of the perspective, of the perspective or whatever you say. There were people that were very conscious about their lifestyle design, and I admired that in them. And then there were people that I watched that were always hustling and grinding, and they seemed like they were on, you know, at the end of their wit, and that they were about to burn out or they had burned out. And I've seen both of that in some of those groups. Now, you know, like Strategic Coach is a great company. They're all about helping the company. They call it the self-managing company, you know, building a self-managing company. And they do a great job of teaching entrepreneurs, you know, how to do that. And so they're all about everything we've been talking about. But, you know, like in like Genius Network and Maverick, like Maverick is all about having fun and traveling and doing things like that together. And, you know, Genius Network is about, you know, optimizing your life and your business. But yeah, it's definitely been interesting seeing both perspectives in those groups.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So I guess, you know, we're kind of coming near the end of the show here. I'd love to hear, like, I think it's really clear, entrepreneurs that want to like get back their time and optimize their schedule, the vacation effect for entrepreneurs is definitely the book for them. What are ways that, you know, folks can either, you know, connect with you or if they want to like work with you directly? I don't know if you do that or not. It sounds like you might, but yeah, tell us a little bit more about ways that people that want to like get involved in this movement of the vacation effect in their life and in their work, what would be some ways for them to do that?
Yeah. So the first thing, if they're interested in the book itself, is vacationeffectbook.com. That redirects to my website, denisegosnell.com/book. And that gives them all the info about it. And then on growbysubtraction.com, that redirects to a page on denisegosnell.com that will give them more info about having my team build them a custom roadmap for how to apply this three those three phases we've been talking about today to their specific situation. And then it would then give them the opportunity to learn how to work with me if that's something they want to do, or they could just take the roadmap we create and go implement it on their own if they just want to do that. So those are the two best ways, vacationeffectbook.com and growbysubtraction.com.
Oh my gosh, Denise, I'm so pumped. So listeners, go check out those two sites. We'll put those in the show notes so you don't have to look very far and remember them. If you're driving, you can just go to our show notes. It's on all the different podcast platforms. So go to the show notes, go check those two things out. And man, everyone needs to have a 3 or 4 day work week in my book, especially if you're an entrepreneur, because a normal work day for an entrepreneur is not the normal work day for most folks. We're like, you know, there's a lot going on. So yeah, please go do that. Support the book. I'm so pumped that number one bestseller on Amazon, like, you so deserve it. And I've been seeing all the hype online and I was like, yeah, of course. Like, that didn't surprise me. You just seem like such an awesome soul. And we met a couple years ago, but to see the success you've had and to be able to continue to build your life in this way, leveraging these principles, such an impressive and cool thing for me to see. So Denise, thank you so much for being on the show. Appreciate you so much. And, best of luck to everything you're doing.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast chatting with you today.
Definitely. And listeners, again, if you love the show, share this. Entrepreneurs need to know this stuff. I wish if someone would have been like, hey, Darius, 15 years ago, you need to read this book. What's so cool is we're in an information age now where people like Denise and myself get to like write our books and share our stories. And most people don't know this. Writing a book is a pain in the ass. It's a lot of work. So like the reason we do it, and you don't make any money on the book. Like, you might make it through your business. Like Amazon takes 80% of the money. So
you're not doing it to get rich. That's not where you're doing it for.
No.
You're doing it for the credibility.
It's the worst way ever.
Lead gen is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're doing it to make an impact
and
to
help people. Yeah.
Exactly. As Tucker says, it's so that you are an authority on the subject. Mm-hmm. But my point with that is when someone spends that amount of time to affect the world, this is an opportunity for you as a listener to, you know, be a reader, be a leader, learn it, read it, share it with your friends. That's what we're all about here at The Greatness Machine. So please do that. Support this book. This is what every entrepreneur needs to do this. And if you love the show, share it, give us a rating, give us a review. With that said, we love you. Peace out. You are listening to The Greatness Machine, and that's a wrap for today. Listen, if you love what you heard, subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform that you're tuning in on, so that you don't miss any of our future episodes. We have tons of great people coming on, and we're stoked to have you here to enjoy it with us. Leave us a review. Tell us what you love most about this particular episode. We love getting the reviews. We love to see what you guys love most. And if this particular episode, you know, made you think of someone who's leveling up in their business and in their life, print screen, share it with them. Leaders are the best givers. And after all, we're all here to support and grow with each other. And in case you want to see some of the fun behind the scenes shots or some of the things that we're doing, I'm actually writing about this in my weekly newsletter. Go to www.therealdarius.com and subscribe to my newsletter. We're talking about fun things like business and life and mindfulness and cryptocurrencies and gosh, I don't even know, everything and anything, but it's tons of fun stuff I write about. I try to get it out on a weekly basis. You can subscribe at www.therealdarius.com. And with that said, look, thank you guys so much. I appreciate you. I love you. Peace. We're out of here. See you guys on the next one. Hey there, what's up, everybody? Darius here, and I'm here to tell you about my main man, Robert Glazer, and his amazing show, The Elevate Podcast. Robert is a buddy of mine, and his Elevate Podcast is second to none. So The Elevate Podcast, what is it? It's a conversational show where Robert sits down with world-class CEOs, New York Times best-selling authors, and the best thought leaders and performers in their fields. You're going to hear stories about triumph, failure, resilience, more importantly, all the learnings along the way. So some of his guests include James Clear from Atomic Habits, Angela Duckworth from Grit, Susan Cain, author of Quiet, Morning Brew founder and CEO Alex Lieberman, and hundreds more. Every episode shares valuable insights in how to expand your capabilities as a leader and align your life and work to your most important principles. Robert's goal is that you're going to leave each episode inspired and with plenty of next steps that you can put into practice into your life. And look, if you're looking to elevate your life, your leadership, and your business, Elevate is the show for you. It's like I always say, we as podcast listeners, we listen to 6 shows, not just mine, but Bob should be one of yours. Subscribe to the Elevate Podcast today on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Check it out.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.